it may not feel like election season, but next Tuesday, voters across the state will go to the polls for a series of recall-related primary elections. Statewide, there will be a recall primary for governor and lieutenant governor, as well as four Senate recall primaries. In parts of western Wisconsin, Republican State Senator Terry Moulton is up for recall, and there are two Democratic candidates seeking to challenge him. Next Tuesday's primary will decide which Democrat will be on the recall general election ballot on June 5th. This hour, we'll get to know the Democratic candidates running in the 23rd Senate District, what they stand for, and what they hope to accomplish if elected. I'm Rich Kramer, and this is The West Side. I'm joined in studio by Democratic candidates Kristen Dexter and James Engel. Dexter is a former state assemblywoman, and she's also the former Eau Claire County Democratic Party chair from Eau Claire. Kristen Dexter, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome, Rich.
And also I'd like to welcome James Engel. He's a political newcomer from Fall Creek. And James Engel, thank you so much for being here as well.
I appreciate the opportunity.
And before we get into the discussion, I want our listeners to know that a big part of tonight's program will be audience participation. That is, we want to hear from you. What do you think of the candidates? What do you think of the constant recall elections we've had in the past year? And what about fake or protest candidates? Give us a call and let us know. The number is 800-228-5615. That number again is 1-800-228-5615. And we'd also like to welcome the same input from those listeners who are tuning in online and streaming us live on WPR.org/Eau Claire. And we flipped a coin just before we went live on the air, and Kristen Dexter won the toss. So I'll start with you. We'll get some basic information from both candidates. Kristen Dexter, you were elected to the State Assembly in 2008, representing the 68th District for 2 years. Then you lost to Republican Kathy Bernier during the Republican wave in 2010. Why are you running again now for State Senate?
Well, back in 2010, I was on the campaign trail with, the Republican candidates at the time, and I heard Scott Walker on the campaign trail, and they were making some very bold promises about what they would do if they were elected. And I think the center promise, the number one promise, was to create 250,000 jobs and to make the economy work better. And at that promise, I guess I would say that they've been quite a failure. And, you know, we have, for months on end, been at the bottom of the heap as far as economic recovery.
And at this rate, it would take the governor 50 years to create the jobs that he has promised. So this is really bad news for a lot of people. I was knocking on doors in Abbotsford a couple weeks ago and talked to a gentleman who had been unemployed for 3 years. And his benefits ran out a whole year earlier. And he's having a hard time. He wants to work, but he can't find a job. And there are a lot of people like him, the chronically unemployed or underemployed people. And there's a lot of economic insecurity right now. And so I guess that central promise and that fundamental issue has not been addressed. And that is, how do we create an economy that works better for more people? And how do we bring that financial security for all families in the state? How do we make the economy work better for more people? It's what people want.
Now, James Engel, same question to you. What brings you to the run at the 23rd State Senate District?
I believe that the state and the nation are at an economic crisis, and that action must be taken by people willing to solve the problems we face. Political bickering and partisanship simply do not benefit citizens. I will reach across the aisle both ways to solve problems, and I will work for citizens, not the parties, not the special interests, and not campaign funding.
Now, oh, I'm sorry. That's okay. The job losses, the economic crisis, James Engel, is there one party or one person or one ideology to blame for it? Or what do you think caused it?
Much of it, of course, is at the national level. There is no question about that. If you read accounts in the paper, letters to the paper, both sides claim credit. I agree with Kristen that the Wisconsin employment rate has not gone up. However, I disagree with her. The promise that Mr. Walker made was for his term. And at the present time, unemployment, I believe, is at 6.8%, the lowest that it has been for 4 years. I see this as a divisive issue between the parties. I see the parties butting heads, and I don't see them really working for the citizens to get it all together and have a unified front from the state.
But isn't that, I mean, the parties have butted heads on jobs from the very beginning, I imagine. How, and we've seen in the last year at least, that the two parties, at least in Wisconsin, can't seem to find any common ground on jobs. One example being that mining bill that didn't go anywhere. As a state senator, how would you, one person in the state government and legislature, change that?
I'm fully aware that I would be one person out of 33 senators.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I, in my former employment in the federal government, I was in a situation where there was crisis after crisis, and I had the opportunity to sit down and talk to people, and that's what I intend to do, to try to bring a rational way of thinking. You mentioned the mining up north. As a result of the partisanship, there were two more recalls that were brought up mm-hmm. and may come about. We're not solving the problem. We are simply bickering at one another and pointing fingers. Why cannot people sit down and talk this thing out?
Fair enough question. Now, Kristen Dexter, would you, the job losses, the Democratic Party has been touting that the economic or the job losses have begun with the introduction of Governor Walker's budget. Who is to blame? Is there one party? Are the Republicans in the legislature to blame, or Governor Walker? And how would you, what specific ways would you go about maybe bringing both sides together and getting some jobs out there?
Well, the job losses, as you know, began during the Great Recession.
Mm-hmm.
When we went into office, when I was first elected, the entire nation was suffering tremendous job loss.
Housing collapse, et cetera.
Yeah, it was terrible. I mean, yeah, exactly. The housing bubble burst, and the fallout was apparent in 46 of the 50 states. I think 4 states only escaped the economic downturn. And so we had the same difficulties that states across the nation were facing. So, I mean, job losses began back in 2007, 2008. But the difference is that the governor and Terry Moulton and the current Republican electeds campaigned on setting, I think I remember them saying that government can't create jobs, but it can create the atmosphere that is conducive to a prosperous economy.
Mm-hmm.
And so those conditions, I would argue, have not been met. And so I'm not saying that they're responsible for the job losses that were going on previous to their administration, but the promises for creating the economic conditions have not been met.
Well, the economic or the promises that they've made, some of them regard tax breaks for companies to hire more people or to expand. Do you think that tax breaks is the correct way to spur job creation or economic growth?
Possibly, incentives work in some cases, but I think what will spur demand is consumer demand. Consumer demand is about 70% of economic activity. And when we have consumers without extra money in their pockets, without the ability to spend discretionary income, then we have low demand. And no matter how much we incentivize a company to make a product or to provide a service, if there isn't demand for that product or service, then they're not going to invest in that product or service, regardless of how many tax credits we give them. So I would argue that the way to begin to stimulate the economy is to ensure that we have money in people's pockets and good-paying jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And, what the governor did with cutting public employees' pay, I think, is counterintuitive to that.
Well, that brings us right to a main topic in this all of these recalls, even though it seems to be kind of overshadowed now by talking about jobs and about certain bills like equal pay. James Engel, the collective bargaining, you were on a program last week with Ben Marins at Issue on, with Ben Marins. You mentioned that you're not in support of collective bargaining for public employees. Why is that?
I served in the federal government for 30 years. I did not have collective bargaining. Collective bargaining was not something that the federal employees had or have. The agency treated me very well. In the private sector, there are the unions must allow the companies certain means, because if they don't, if the companies go out of business, that means that the union people also go out of business. That does not occur in the public sector. You can only go back to the trough so many times. The teachers that were mentioned were a result of property tax. The property tax, because of the economy, has decreased. I don't think there's any question about that. I think we have to look at the unfunded mandates that are out there. And with a $16 billion deficit that this state has at present, we have to look for the future. We can't pass that on to our kids. We can't grow that out of anything. And we cannot increase taxes on any particular group or groups to match, to come up with the $16 billion deficit. It's just economically not possible. Then add to that the municipality debt. For example, in Eau Claire, it was recently reported Eau Claire is $80.5 million in debt, plus whatever unfunded mandates there might be. The Eau Claire schools have an unfunded mandate of $283 million in retirement benefits. The Augusta School District is nearly $20 million in debt. Wisconsin unfunded mandates amount to $3 billion. Wisconsin is currently rated by the rating companies as a capital A, small a, dash 2 for general obligation funds. That is one of the worst in the nation. We're headed down the wrong path. We're simply headed down the wrong path, and the parties continue to argue and argue and argue, but are unwilling to sit down and talk to one another.
Kristen Dexter, the a response to Mr. Engel's claims about the $16 billion deficit and the unfunded mandates being pension and retirement stuff?
Well, I'm not sure Scott Walker would agree with that $16 million deficit figure. I guess I've been hearing more like $3.5 billion, so I'm not really sure over what course of time you're, you know, that $16 billion
encompasses. $16 billion includes $12.9 billion that we actually owe on debt, actual owing. Then there is almost $3 billion, which are unfunded mandates. The state just recently paid an interest bill, just a portion of the debt that we owe, and they had to pay $40 million. Just think of what that $40 million would have done for the state had we had our cards in order and had we been fiscally responsible. That $40 million could have been used for an awful lot of things that both parties would certainly agree upon and vie for getting it.
They would definitely vie for getting that money. Kristen Dexter, if you were elected into the state senate, would you fight to reinstate collective bargaining, I guess, is one of the 800-pound gorillas in the room that we're going to discuss tonight.
Right. Well, I think collective bargaining definitely has its place in the workplace and in the economy. For 50 years we had case law that helped establish rules and conditions under which agreements were bargained and workplace safety, workplace fairness were brought forth in an atmosphere in which workers and management not always coexisted peacefully, but we knew how to do it. And the sudden yanking away of the 50 years of case law has caused a lot of uncertainty in the workplace now. Municipalities, for instance, and school boards are having to write handbooks, and they're taking a lot of time doing this. It's a very complicated process. And so, you know, it has caused some uncertainty. It has caused it's a cumbersome process now that they have to go forward under, and nobody really knows what to do. In fact, attorneys who work for management don't even really know how to advise their clients because they don't know what courts are going to find. They think that there's going to be an awful lot of litigation coming, you know, in the future now because of the uncertainty. And so I would argue that just from a managerial standpoint, getting rid of collective bargaining has not been a good thing. But I think just from the atmosphere of trust, working together, collaboration, it's not a good thing. Mm-hmm. Getting rid of it has not been a good thing. I think it's got its place. But people say, so should we go back to the way it was? Would you advocate going back to the way things were? And I would say to that also, though, no. I mean, the way things were working wasn't always great. And so can we take some of the basic tenets of collective bargaining and put them on, you know, decide what's important, decide what we want to keep, and then lay everything else out on the table and say, all right, what makes a good contract now? What do workers really need? What are some of the basic, essential, elements of a good contract that they really want and they really need? And let's put those back in the contracts. But again, this takes collaboration and it takes sitting across a table. It takes a free flow of ideas. It takes trust. And I would say that a lot of those conditions are lacking right now. But I think collective bargaining has its place because it allows a process to be in place.
Do you think that the recall this time around, this summer, do you think it boils down to collective bargaining? Is it a battle between, you know, a battle by unions to get back what they had before?
I think it's far bigger than that, and I think we have a lot of anecdotes coming from people who were very active collecting the recall signatures, mm-hmm. and there were a lot of reasons. You know, there were 1.9 million signatures collected, and I would say there's probably close to 1.9 million reasons why people want recall. We heard from everybody who have concerns about the environment to Badger Care to their job security. Jobs was number one. Badger Care was a close number two as far as the anecdotes I heard coming back from the field. People are concerned about a lot of things. People are concerned about, again, I think it goes back to that element, that fundamental promise about economic security that was made and that hasn't been kept. They feel like they're working harder, working longer hours, getting paid less. Healthcare, health insurance premiums have gone up, and it's a lot of people are struggling.
All right, we're talking this hour about with the Democratic candidates going head to head in the 23rd State Senate District recall primary that's happening next Tuesday. The winner of that primary will go on to challenge Republican State Senator Terry Moulton on June 5th. When we come back, we'll talk more, or we'll take some calls for the candidates, and we'll dig a little bit deeper into what they stand for. You're listening to The West Side. If you missed part of the program and you want to listen again, check out the West Side Online Archives. Go to WPR.org, click on The West Side, then you'll find the Listen Here link. And you can also stream this program if you're transitioning from Radio Land back into your computer. Just go to WPR.org/Eau Claire, and you'll find a link to stream this program live. We'll be right back.
It's from Ministry Healthcare, known in the Stanley area as Ministry Our Lady of Victory Hospital and in Marshfield as Ministry St. Joseph's Hospital. Ministry Healthcare, knowing and treating you better. Online at ministryhealth.org.
A work by UWEC Assistant Professor of English B.J. Hollers has won a prestigious award. We'll welcome the author. Jim Oliver talks with director Wayne Merrick of the Eau Claire Children's Theater about Spring Awakening opening soon. Menominee band director Jake Karkula is here to talk about the Big Spring Swing, three art tours just down the road this weekend. And we'll sample some music that's hitting the Heidi tomorrow night. That includes Sue Orfield. Hear it all on Spectrum West, 5 p.m. tomorrow, on this station of the Ideas Network.
Support for WPR comes from the Mabel Tainter Center for the Arts. The contemporary piano duo of Stanislava Varshavsky and Diana Shapiro appear in the Landmark Theater Friday, May 11th at 7:30. Details at MabelTainter.com.
I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio's 88.3 WHWC, 88.7 WRFW, and streaming online at WPR.org. We're joined by the two Democratic candidates hoping to take a swipe at the 23rd State Senate seat, currently held by Republican Terry Moulton. He's up for recall. Those candidates are James Engel, who is a self-described independent who was tapped by the Republican Party to run as a Democrat, thus forcing a primary election. And I'm also joined by Kristen Dexter, a former state assemblywoman and a former chair of the Democratic Party of Eau Claire. We would like to hear from our listeners. If you've got a call or a question or a comment for either of our guests, give us a call at 800-228-5615. That number again is 800-228-5615. Now, I mentioned the 800-pound gorillas in the room. One of them is, this question's for James Engel. One of them is the use of protest candidates or fake Democrats, depending on your point of view, is what people are calling them. And a lot has been made about the Republican Party's use of those candidates to force primary elections in this most recent recall process. You're one of those candidates, and some do call you a fake Democrat. Some call you protest candidate. For the sake of our listeners in Western Wisconsin, how would you describe your candidacy?
Before I start on that, I would like to point out that there is also a fake Republican that is running for governorship.
Arthur Cole Riggs?
So there are fake Democrats and fake Republicans. I think that that's a terminology that the media has adopted. And I take exception to that. I am running. The Republican Party came to me and asked me if I would run as a protest candidate. And I gladly accepted. I gladly accepted after some thought because I do have a lot of protest in me. And I think both parties have shown poor judgment in a number of areas. And I see that that is continuing in this recall election. Fingers are still being pointing at the various candidates. He did this, she did that, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That does not solve the problem. As a candidate, my goal is to work for the citizens. It simply is to work for the citizens, not the party, not for political bickering, not for campaign funds, but for the citizens of the state. And I think too long we have been avoiding that. I would like to go back just a moment on the collective bargaining. Kristen mentioned that collective bargaining was in place for 50 years. That is true. I agree with that. However, I would call to your attention and to the audience's attention that collective bargaining was definitely controlled under Governor Doyle. We had the QEO, Qualified Economic Offer, and only certain percentages were allowed within the collective bargaining.
Mm-hmm.
So to come out and say that we should have collective bargaining for wages, Again, you do not have a checks and balance system in the public sector, and I strongly disagree with it being in the public sector.
Kristen Dexter, would you like to reply to the QEO aspect?
Well, that's no longer in place, so
right.
I don't know that that's really a relevant, you know, platform at the moment. That was removed, and collective bargaining is gone. So I guess I just stand by my former statement that I do think that having the table as the forum around which to collaborate, come up with best practices, decide what's best for the employer and the employee is a legitimate way to go about business.
Okay. I did want to go back to the whole the candidate, the fake Democrat, the protest candidate thing. You've mentioned when you were on the At Issue with Ben Marins that you've been a lifelong independent. You voted for both parties throughout your
life. That is correct.
But you were recruited by the Republican Party to run as a Democrat. Do you understand why that would anger some people or at least confuse them?
Yes. No question. Yes. I believe that the fake Republican was put in place much before I was put in as a fake Democrat. And certainly that gentleman understood what was going on. The Republican Party, as one person on the other show pointed out, I'm being used by the Republican Party. Maybe, maybe not. I don't think they expected their candidate to start running very seriously, and I have done that. I have been on the road for 3 weeks, and I am doing that. The fake Democrat, go ahead and call me that. There is the thing that I think we have to remember, the recall as well as the fake Republican or Democrat are both allowable by state law. The accountability board has found that I am a viable candidate.
Mm-hmm.
There is no question the recall was done in a legal manner. To change either, we're going to have to change the Constitution, which takes two legislative sessions plus a referendum for the people, or we're going to have to do something else.
One other thing that you mentioned, well, you mentioned that you have been campaigning. I'm wondering, did the Republican Party, in when they contacted you to run as a Democrat, did they specify whether or not did they say you shouldn't campaign, or did they say that you shouldn't challenge or you should drop out if you do win the primary?
No, there was no discussion over that whatsoever. The discussion, which I'm sure that will be brought up in this program,
mm-hmm.
Was that I am from a rural district, and to run for senator, I require 400 signatures, maximum of 800.
Mm-hmm.
The possibility of me getting that on my own without party assistance, whether it be Democrat, whether it be Republican, would be near impossible. I can only speculate what would have happened had I gone to the Democratic Party and said, would you help me out getting my 400 signatures to run against Kristen Dexter? I can only imagine what the answer would have been.
Gotcha. Let's go to the phones. We've got a caller that is hoping to weigh in on the whole idea or the whole situation of the protest candidates. And we've got Carol in Chippewa Falls, and we'll go to Carol right now. Carol, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in. Carol, are you there? And it looks like we lost her. Kristen Dexter, what's your thought? What's your take on the use of James Engel as a protest candidate or a fake Democrat, and of the use of Arthur Cole Riggs possibly as a fake Republican?
I have not been following the Arthur Cole Riggs race at all, but I can tell you that I think the whole fake idea, the whole fake candidacy, just fuels the cynicism and the confusion and the sense of disconnectedness that a lot of voters already feel about our political system. I don't dispute that there's a lot of political polarization, and that's not good for democracy. But neither is the confusion fueled by this latest, you know, the whole fake scenario we've got, which has now become so common to have the phrase fake Democrat or fake Republican in our lingo is, I think, sad. And when I talk to people about it, their typical reaction is kind of they hang their head, they shake, and they give a little chuckle. It's like, are you kidding me? And, you know, we knew it was coming. It's just a part of the – it's a part of what we've – it's one of the roadblocks that we knew we were going to have to get over. I might add, I live between Altoona and Fall Creek, and I relied on friends and supporters to collect my recall signatures. And I did not, you know – I guess that's the method by which I collected the 400 or 800 signatures. And I do know that I received that letter from the Republican Party that was sent out on your behalf that asked people to collect signatures for you. Did you ever see that letter, by the way?
I became aware of the letter on April 20th. I finally saw a copy on April 24th. And my name was down at the bottom of the letter.
Mm-hmm.
I totally disclaim that letter. I disclaim knowledge of my signing the letter or having knowledge of the letter. When I raised the question originally with the Republican Party, I need 400 to 800 signatures, they said, we will send out a letter to 4,000 to 6,000 people to do so. The letter has been raised time after time as being a terrible, terrible thing. I would suggest that anyone, including my challenger, that if it is such a problem, that they take it to the accountability board and say, look at this terrible thing. One party has fabricated a whole new era. And I'm sure that the accountability board would be absolutely beside themselves knowing that a politician or a political party lied.
With that, let's go to the phones. We've got Terry this time in Dunn County. Terry, you're on the air. Are you there?
Thank you.
What's on your mind?
Well, I'm getting really disgusted with what I'm hearing. I don't know why the fake candidate deserves this much time. In August, I'll be 30 years in the university system. And what I see through this whole mess the last year is they've grouped all education into one group. And I don't see any facts like the separation of the UW system versus the K-12 system. The worst thing that the governor could have said is we're the haves and the rest of us are have-nots. I feel I'm a dedicated employee, and to be called a pig and a union thug, it's uncalled for.
All right. Thank you so much for that, Terry. And I will just say for Wisconsin Public Radio's part, the protest candidates, fake Democrats, whatever you want to call them, they are on the ballot. So it is our duty to give them a platform to discuss their views. We don't make the decision of who is a legitimate candidate or not. But thank you very much for that. About education, there was some historic cuts to public K-12 education. And this question will be for James Engel first, and then we'll go to Kristen Dexter. Public education, K-12, the state university system was cut, and the technical colleges were cut. Do you believe that those cuts were warranted, James Engel? At least to the amount that they were cut.
Again, I see the political side of this thing. One side says, very plainly, by eliminating this program, the collective bargaining, by mandating payments, we have given the tools to the school board. The other side says, oh, well, that's really not true. And then the other side comes back and says, well, 50% of the schools that lost money are in Milwaukee, and they did not sign off on the contracts first. The other party comes back with some other explanation, and the gentleman is right to have been called a pig or a union thug is wrong. It is a political party that is doing it, and there are terminologies coming from both parties, and they are wrong. There is no question whatsoever.
Do you believe the cuts to the education were right or wrong?
I would think that the cuts to the education are indeed, they were done in a rightful manner. I do believe that. Education as we know it has some horrific facts behind it. Number one, we are now 17th of all the nations in the world in terms of educational achievement. In the state of Wisconsin, even, only 40% of the kids that are proficient can measure proficient on the national achievement test. The education system absolutely needs to be changed. There is no question. And I think that education for our children, and I am totally for education because I managed to have an opportunity to get a very good education. Education is absolutely necessary because our kids are going to have to compete with those in China, those in India. But our education should be focused.
Gotcha. And let me take that to Chris and Dexter. What are your thoughts on the hundreds of millions that were cut from K-12 state and tech colleges?
Yeah, $800 million cut from direct aid and then another $800 million of restrictions on raising local money. And those were deep and those were devastating. And I also want to address Terry's comment about the denigration of our teaching profession, which I think is one of the saddest things that's happened in the last year and a half. And not just public employees, but it seems like teachers have borne the brunt of the criticism and the name-calling. And, you know, my grandma was a teacher, and she was one of the most amazing people I knew in my life. And she tutored people in her home, and she loved teaching. And even when she couldn't be in the classroom any longer because of illness, she continued teaching in her home. And, I mean, that formed my views on education as a young girl. She always said to me, Kristen, not if you go to college, but when you go to college. She would give me $100 for my birthday every year so that I could put it in my savings account because she wanted me to go to college. I was a first generation. Even though she got her teaching certificate, I was a first generation college student in my family. And so it's been really difficult to hear teachers' stories. You know, that their neighbors are calling them these denigrating names. And that's only part of the story that Scott Walker has painted with education, or I think he's fostered the kind of atmosphere that allows people to think they can say these kinds of things. It's been a very corrosive atmosphere. But a recent audit from the DPI says that more than 2,300 staff and teaching positions were cut this year, which is a 50% increase over last year. Three-quarters of those are teachers, business and tech ed teachers, librarians, reading and science, and special ed.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're talking about, you know, we had a discussion of debt just a few minutes ago. So we're talking about how do we get out of debt? How do we get ahead? One of the main ways of getting out of debt is to grow ourselves out of debt. One of the main drivers of the economy is a well-trained workforce and a well-educated workforce. And so we can't do that when we're making deep, deep cuts to education and our technical college system and workers training programs. So, you know, we have only a limited number of tax dollars that come in. We have revenue that comes in. And I think, you know, what this current administration has done has been to prioritize things in a way that I wouldn't prioritize them. I would prioritize education. I take what the resources we have and reorganize them to put the focus on education, not on tax cuts to corporations that take jobs out of the state. Investing in our K-12, pre-K is actually where we need to start making that investment. Pre-K through high school, and then post-secondary education and worker training programs. You know, there's a lot of unemployed right now who, a lot of unemployed people in their 50s and 60s. They're pre-retirement age, and they need jobs. So how can we retool our education and training system to help them go forward and continue to earn, for their ending years?
Is there a situation, do you believe that there is a situation where funding should be cut to K-12? I mean, if a budget is bad enough for a state budget, and that's one of the options, should it never be on the table?
Well, as you know, when I was in the legislature, we made historic cuts, and education was among them. And, so I have had to make that tough decision. I didn't like doing it. I'd say that public education has been cut to the bone and beyond. I think, again, it's about investing in our priorities. And I would say that I'd prefer to see less money going to the private schools in the Milwaukee area, the unaccountable voucher schools that don't have to report their test scores, that don't have to follow the same kinds of guidelines that public education does. There was more money invested in those schools in this budget than in public education. That's a wrong priority. I would say, again, giving tax breaks is not my first priority. I'd rather invest that money in education, in public education, in technical colleges. It's what we need to grow our economy. If we can't get traction, how are we going to grow? And well-educated, well-trained workers is the traction we need to grow.
We've got another caller on the line, and a reminder, if anyone else wants to get in on the conversation and ask a question to either of our candidates, James Engel or Kristen Dexter, the number is 800-228-5615. That number again is 800-228-5615. We've got just over 10 minutes left on the program, so if you've got something that's a burning question at the tip of your tongue, call us right now and get that on the air. We'll go to Colfax right now, and we've got Willem on the phone. And Willem, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Well, I was just calling about Mr. Engel's comments about, things I think that our Wisconsin values, like honesty and ethical behavior and open government and fairness and all those sort of things. And I don't see how this letter that was sent on his behalf, and I asked the Republican Party, they claim they had nothing to do with that letter. And yet, I think this whole administration is full of these kind of things. This Scott Walker, I find him to be an unethical person. He had the power and the pulpit to say to people, stop calling these people thugs. He never tried to damp down the fervor or heal the rift, and it hasn't been good for anyone ever since he, in his own words, dropped the bomb on Wisconsin. There's been this disease that hasn't been good for anyone. So I think that he is the problem, and I don't see how you can support him like with those values that you were speaking about, because I think that when he thought he was talking to David Koch, he suggested putting people, agitators, into a peaceful crowd with women and children, and, those are not Wisconsin values. So I think that he needs to go for the state to go forward.
All right. Thanks so much for the call, Willem. And James Engel, do you feel that the governor has been operating in an unethical manner, or do you have any qualms with the way that he didn't actually come out and publicly say, just cool it both sides?
I have qualms from the standpoint of what occurred to me, which was a result of the Republican Party, the letter that went out under my signature. Mm-hmm. I have to give Governor Walker credit for what he has done. He campaigned on promises to balance the budget, and he did that. Now, I may not agree totally and completely. I may disagree with him totally and completely on some of the things that he has done. But he did do what he said. And quite frankly, he's the first politician in a long time that I've heard do what they were going to, or do what they said they were going to do.
What about the accusations by folks on the left that say that he didn't actively campaign on breaking the unions or getting rid of collective bargaining, that he kind of did a bait and switch on in that case?
I really have nothing to say on that. I really don't know what went on behind the scenes. I was not in the party. I would point out that when the collective bargaining was done, the Democratic senators fled to Illinois. They should have been on the floor yelling and screaming and hollering and doing their business there. They certainly were not doing the business that they were voted in for.
All right. We'll take our final break here on the west side. If anyone else has any calls, you can squeeze them in. We've probably got time for one more, maybe two. The number is 800-228-5615. We're talking about the candidates, or we're talking with the candidates that are running for the 23rd State Senate District seat, which is currently held by Terry Moulton, who is up for recall. We'll take a brief break, but we'll be right back with more West Side.
Contributors to WPR include University of Wisconsin Stout, Wisconsin's Polytechnic University, committed to innovative and inspired learning, delivering 63 undergraduate and graduate majors on campus and online. uwstout.edu.
Is the weekday commute getting to you?
I'm driving right now as I'm online. A propane tanker.
The office getting a little crazy?
I'm impressed, Miss Harrison. I never saw anybody hit an author before.
Well, just a little move we learned in biblio-taekwondo.
On-the-job perks getting smaller?
My very own three-hole punch!
Right. Escape from it all this weekend.
A Prairie Home Companion, Saturday evening at 5 on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Festival Foods, introducing Amy Hanton, the cooking mom, a wife and mother who shares recipes, tips, stories, and cooking secrets. The Cooking Mom, festfoods.com.
Welcome back to the West Side. Now, we all know that elections are important, but last summer's slate of Senate recall elections narrowed the Republican majority in the state Senate, and this summer's recalls could flip that House from Republican to Democratic control. Our candidate forum is being broadcast on Ideas 88.3 WHWC, 88.7 WRFW, and being streamed online. And we've got both Kristen Dexter and James Engel that are both on the Democratic ticket that are hoping to challenge Terry Moulton. Listeners, give us a call, 800-228-5615. That number again is 800-228-5615. You can post a message on our Facebook page, and we'll try to squeeze it in before the end of the hour. Now, I wanted to go back to, well, this is a question for both candidates, but I wanted to start with James Engel. You mentioned that you will challenge Terry Moulton if you are the winner of the primary election. So what advantages do you have over Moulton, and why should Moulton be voted out?
I think Mr. Moulton is a very bright, brilliant young person, just as I think Kristen Dexter is a bright, brilliant young person. I do believe strongly in my heart that we have government for the people, by the people, and of the people, not for, by, or of the parties or their special interests. And I see both parties working on special interests. I think I offer the citizens of this state, or the citizens of this district, a new look.
Very good. Kristen Dexter, what advantages do you have over Terry Moulton, and why do you think he should go?
Well, again, it goes back to the first statement I made about the economy and about the economic security of families. And the campaign promise that was clearly made, clearly stated, was broken, and broken badly. And I think my priorities are different than Terry's, although I know we both want the best for the people in this district. I know that. I don't doubt that. I know Terry wants a strong education system. I know Terry wants people to be working. But the way they're going about it, I think, is wrong. The priorities are wrong. Investment in people and investment in education and investment, again, in worker training and investment in the human capital, I think, is what I would prioritize. I would take what we've got for resources in the government, reshuffle them, and focus on human capital and on our communities, on our families, on what makes families strong and what makes communities strong, because what makes them strong makes our economy strong.
All right. Final call of the evening. We're going to go to Chippewa Falls, and we've got Barb on the line. Barb, thanks for calling. We are getting close to the top of the hour, so please, if you could be brief.
All right. I will be brief, and thank you for having the show.
Thank you.
Both candidates. My question, just like on the national level and the state level, the state legislature promises to talk about jobs in the economy, and then all of a sudden we're repealing the Healthy Youth Act, and we're killing wolves, and we're doing all kinds of stuff and not accomplishing. Maybe just a brief comment on the focus that each candidate would have on priorities that do have to do with taking care of children, because they are our future, and really doing something about jobs. And so I appreciate a comment from each.
All right, thanks a lot. James Engel, please, and be as concise as possible.
I was brought up by my mother. I think parents have a responsibility. I do not believe in preschool. I believe that that is a program that could be cut very readily, and the parents should accept their responsibility.
All right. Kristen Dexter?
Again, investing in people and investing in families and investing in communities, I completely disagree with James Engel. Pre-K education is one of the best investments that we can make. It has great payoff in the end, as do worker training programs, as do, you know, any kind of public education, as does, you know, anything that, well, equal pay for women. You know, making that more difficult to achieve, I think, was a wrongheaded thing to do and shows a feeling that women who are half the bread earners aren't valued as much as a man.
All right. Well, I wish we had more time for both of our guests, but that is all we've got. And I'd like to thank them very much for being here. Democratic candidates Kristen Dexter of Eau Claire and James Engel of Fall Creek, thank you both so much for being here. Also, a big thanks to Team Westside, including Mort Cypress, for handling on-air production, Henry Lippold for helping produce the program, and Grace Fair for promotions, and Ellen Zamaripa and Dean Kallenbeck for keeping us all on track. Tune in next week for a look at the ever-present and growing problem of poverty in western Wisconsin. I'm Rich Kramer. We'll chat again next week.